This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you. Matt and Patrick here, and guest-free today. Ooh la la, so lots of time if you do want to call on in. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And by the way, coming up here a little bit later on in the 4 o'clock hour locally here in the Twin Cities, got a lot of stuff to talk about with Kathy Griffith, plus something about maybe a tailgate event we're going to be doing over with Sexy Liberal. I'll get to that here in just a little bit. But it is opening day of baseball, Patrick, right? I think that, you know, and just for the Chicago folks, hey, I like the Cubbies. I'll stay quiet on the White Sox. Needless to say, I love the Cubbies. But the Twins are playing at Kansas City. They're opening up on the road in March. Good call. I think there's a foot of snow over on Target Field right now. Let me know, with Byron Buxton leading off, how long it takes for him to break a leg in like eight places just walking up for the first at bat, okay?
Yep, I'll keep an eye on that for you.
The most appropriate nickname I've ever come up with for anyone on the planet is Mr. Glass for Byron Buxton. That guy. He was thinking about picking up his back, and he broke his wrist. Oh, no, that's not going to be good. I do not have a lot of how many players do we – am I playing today? I mean, there are that many people on the injured reserve for the Twins this year.
Yeah, bullpen's looking pretty weak to open up the season just because of those injuries.
Well, if we're going to open up weak on the season, no better place than Kansas City, because I don't – do they have anything there in Kansas City right now?
Well, a lot of people actually think that could be kind of a dark horse just because of how bad the AL Central is, but – you know, that's I think that's a little bit of a stretch.
If you're lying, I'm dying, because it is. I think of the whole all the divisions, it's probably the weakest. They got Trout already homered today, and nothing against games that were happening in Korea and stuff, and you know, while players were making bets on games or anything like that. No. This is opening day. Although, it's just me. I mean, opening day in March does not feel right. Am I crazy about that?
No, it does feel a little awkward, but it's not like it's the first time it's ever happened, though,
well,
either.
But I guess in the same sense, we have the World Series now decided in November. The boys, you know, October baseball is now November baseball. I mean, how much longer is it before it's Mardi Gras to Thanksgiving at this point? A lot to get to today, not necessarily about baseball, but do let me know how long it takes for Byron Buxton to get injured. And if I did call that, you're welcome, America. There you go. I like the Twins and stuff, and when the guy is healthy, he's an amazing player, but man, does that guy get injured a lot. Ugh, he gets injured a lot. Who are you picking to win the whole thing this year?
I don't know, because the obvious favorite is the Dodgers, but they always find a way to not get it done in October.
As Ohtani says, smart money is on. Never mind. Sorry. Sorry, no, shouldn't go down that until there's been a trial. How about those Baltimore Orioles? You thinking they might go?
Yeah, I think last year, very young team. I think that's why they didn't do so well in the playoffs, who got swept out by the Texas Rangers, who coincidentally they'll be opening up against the Cubs. It'll be about 6:30 p.m. Central Time first pitch, so it'll be about wrapping up by the time we come on in Chicago tonight.
But can I ask a favor for any Cubs player out there? How much money do you and I have together? I got like $40 on me. All right, how many do you have? If you being a Texas Ranger, if one of those Cubby pitchers, we will give you. Was it $47? We have $47 whole dollars if a Cubs pitcher beans a Texas Ranger. Just money in the bank right there, buddies. Money in the bank. What is that? That gets you like two hot dogs in Chicago, right?
Maybe a hot dog and a half, but they might be plain. You might not get that great Chicago-style hot dog.
Are they playing in Texas?
Yep, in Arlington.
Oh, God. Definitely. Definitely. Someone call them. I have $47 if you plunk one of them, all right? Go Cubs. Hey, I am a Cubs fan. I do like the Cubbies. I'm not a big fan of the Brewers, not a big fan of the – don't really like the St. Louis Cardinals at all. You know, the Reds I could like, but, you know, they just – you talk about a team of underachievers – and Pittsburgh, no, that's not happening. So, you know, go Cubbies, man. Let's get it done. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So I want to start off today with, you know, I'm going to predict the future, but before I do get to that, I do want to talk about a bit of breaking news. FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried has been sentenced to 25 years in prison on Thursday for the massive fraud and conspiracy that doomed his cryptocurrency exchange and related hedge fund Alameda Research. Now, I want to remind people, this failed not because of any, you know, he was looking at it as his own piggy bank. I have a family member at one point who owned a business and would come in at night. I was talking to one of the people that worked for him, and people would come in at night, and he'd basically just, you know, open the till and take money out and went right down how much money it was and where it was going and was using it for. And it didn't surprise me that business kind of went out of business. If you basically use your business as a personal piggy bank, and these guys, when you get to this level where you're at these billion-dollar corporations, these guys get a taste of that. They get a taste of you know, living that lifestyle, the yachts, the private jets, the you know, women on beck and call sort of thing. That's when they get used to that, it's a very hard thing to go back to working a regular job. And that's what happens to all these guys. I mean, they just get to a point where they want to live the Vegas, you know, top roller lifestyle everywhere they go. I mean, Elon Musk is a poster child for that. Trump's a poster child for that. You know, they all are. And if you're treating your business like it's a personal piggy bank, it's a matter of time before, you know, it's going to go away. And there are a lot of people that still think that this guy has stashed a bunch of money and I'll wait 25 years and then he'll come on out and he'll find some country where there's no extradition and he'll be sitting on a beach for the rest of his life, you know, looking at the money that basically he ripped people off with. The sentence in Manhattan federal court was significantly less than the 40 to 50 years in prison the federal prosecutors wanted, but it was much more than the 5 to 6.5 years suggested by his attorneys. There is a risk that this man will be in position to do something very bad in the future, said Judge Lewis Kaplan, said before sentencing the 32-year-old and ordering him to pay $11 billion in forfeiture to the U.S. government, which, like I said, he's basically, you know, guys like this, they've got that money stashed someplace. And, you know, he just has to bide his time. You know, he'll find the two biggest guys in the prison and basically say, "You keep me safe, I'll get you I'll get your family in 25 years, they'll get $1 million payout or 20 years, and then you don't have to worry about it." And, you know, he'll get out and, like I said, find a country with no extradition, and off he goes. And we think this is punishment. Don't get me wrong. I mean, 25 years is more than I thought he was going to get, but, you know, I wish we had the forensics people to track down where the money is, because that's really where the question is. And we've created a financial system where wealthy people can cheat the system very easily. There's ways around it very easily. And we have the rest. I mean, it's kind of like how sports teams treat steroid testing. They're already 10 years behind where the current drugs, performance enhancing drugs are at. And they can only basically, you know, play catch up all the time. So 952-946-6205. But the reason I brought this up is because I want to talk a little bit about how I'm going to predict the future here with a massive fraud case that I don't even think it's going to be 5 to 10 years. I think it's going to be relatively soon. I think maybe within a year or so, we're going to have a massive fraud case, because if you haven't paid attention to the Truth Social public offering, there are so many dang red flags with this. Someone, I mean, it might not be Trump. I mean, it might be the people in Wall Street that basically assess these things, but they really overvalued this business. For the first time in almost 30 years, part of Donald Trump's business empire has gone public. Trading started with a bang, but the frenzy erased considerably by the closing bell. The shares ending well off their highs for the day. Trump Media and Technology Group, the owner of the struggling social media platform Truth Social, began its long-delayed journey to the public company on Tuesday. Ticker symbol is DJT. The stock surged about 56% at the open to $78 per share. The trading was briefly halted for volatility. Trump Media shares stabilized around 70 before fizzling. By the closing bell, Trump Media ended the day about $57, up by a more modest 16% on the day. Despite the late-day slide, Wall Street is still assigning Trump Media an eye-popping valuation of $11 billion. Now, I want to come back to that. So Wall Street is saying it's going to be $11 billion for Truth, which is such an absolute garbage evaluation for it. I want to give you a great example. Twitter, after Elon Musk destroyed it, which has a much farther grasp than Truth Social, even he said he thought it was worth only $7 to $8 billion at that point. So for you to say that Truth Social is $11 billion, that's, you know, that the CNN article says it's untethered to reality. It is. Now, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to make a lot of people laugh here. I actually am somewhat good at investing. Now, I'm not going to give you advice. No, for God's sakes, no. I'm not going to take any kind of onus for this. But I've done a lot of it over my life. I'm 55 years old. I've done very cautious. I mean, every once in a while, I bought a stock or something like this. And, you know, I've realized if I want to gamble like that, I'll just go to Vegas or just throw it in the toilet, because that's about the same result you get. But I've been somewhat smart when it comes to investing. And so when I look at, like, the prospectus on this, on Truth Social, it doesn't make any damn sense whatsoever. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Because if this was any other company, no one would be paying attention to it, not nearly to the level it is. This is a stock offering that seems to be based on a lot of hoopla without actually any value behind it. Wait a second. Doesn't that sound familiar to anybody else here? Oh, that's right. Isn't that exactly what Donald Trump has been on trial for in New York? Saying things that are not really worth that much money are worth actually a lot more than they're... it's on brand. And that's what you get with Truth Social. More on this when I come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, this announcement, I have been told, no, Chicago Cubs, do not plunk any of the Texas Rangers today. Do not do that. Even though there's $47 on the line, wink, we don't want to encourage that kind of behavior. Don't do it. All right? I think we have an understanding. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So, okay. You have to understand, everything about Truth Social doesn't make any kind of investment sense. It really doesn't. This is one of those... Frankly, I'm stunned they allowed this company to go to the board, let alone with the valuation that Wall Street itself gave them. Shares of Digital World Acquisition, the shell company that became Trump Media on Tuesday, spiked more than 200% so far this year, but that wasn't coming up from that much. That includes a 35% surge on Monday after the deal closed. Shares popped again at the start of trading on Tuesday, investors' first opportunity to trade the stock at the merger under the new DJT's ticker. The skyrocketing share price comes despite the fact that Trump Media is burning through cash, piling up losses, and its main product, True Social, is actually losing users. None of this makes any damn sense. It's a very unusual situation. The stock is pretty much divorced from fundamentals, said Jay Ritter. Well, it's not. I'll come back to that in a second. The financial professor at the University of Florida's Worthington College of Business, Ritter says the closest parallel would be GameStop, AMC, and the other so-called meme stocks that skyrocketed during COVID-19 as an army of retail traders piled in. He said Trump Media is likely worth somewhere around $2 a share, nowhere near its closing on the first day of $58 a share. And that's actually, I want to make sure you understand, how does fraud exist? This is an investment guy saying, you know, hey, I'll give you a fair assessment. That's a $2 a share company, which is not a, maybe most companies are somewhere around there. You're not, in the sense, you're not at a dollar, you're $2. You got some money coming in, but it sure is not $58. And I'll come, like I said, I'll come back to that in a second. The underlying business doesn't seem to be worth much. There's no evidence this is going to become a largely, highly profitable company. I'm reasonably confident the stock price will eventually drop to $2 a share and even could go below that if the company blows through the money it got from the merger. Oh, I can tell you what, you know, judging from Don Trump Jr., they're going through the blow all right. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here all week. Bang. The eye-popping valuation is a massive windfall for Trump, who owns a dominant stake of the $79 million shares. The Tuesday opening price of nearly 78, that stake is worth $6 billion, though lockup restrictions likely prevent Trump from selling or even borrowing against those shares anytime soon. The value of Trump's stake ended at about $4.6 billion on the closing bell. If it goes, and once again, that closing bell was at 58. If it goes down to 2 like it is, he's going to have like $300 million as opposed to billions. And that's, you know, that's not enough for him to cover his bail. Trump, this is truly just a completely made up thing at this point. Trump Media generated just $3.4 million in revenue for the first 9 months of last year. So Truth Social, they only generated $3.4 million. This is a company that was just valued at $11 billion. You want to sign something is really screwed up here. The company lost in that same span $49 million, which, by the way, you know, I'm no math whiz, but that would mean to me that the company basically is $45.6 million in the hole. But it's got an $11 billion valuation. Once again, for context, Reddit is actually a fairly stable social media company. It's a garbage pit, but it still is a relatively stable one. It was only valued at $6.4 billion in its IPO last week. So Reddit had an IPO last week. It was at $6.4 billion, basically a little more than half of what Trump was for. Even though Reddit generates 160 times more revenue than Trump Media, Reddit hauled in $804 million in revenue in 2023 compared to Trump Media's annual revenue, about $5 million. At these levels, it appears untethered to its underlying business results, said Matthew Kennedy, a senior IPO strategist at Renaissance Capital. Eventually, valuations tend to fall back to the fundamentals. An associate professor of law at NYU School of Law, Michael Olerge, told CNN there's no way to square the current stock price with anything that could be called a rational valuation of the company. Truth Social had just 494,000 monthly active U.S. users on iOS and Android combined in February. That's a small fraction of the 75 million on Twitter, 142 million on Facebook. He doesn't even have 500,000 people using the site. Even Threads has more than 10 times the number of monthly active users than Truth Social does. So basically, you've got 5 million people a month using Threads and only half of 1 million using Truth Social. And yet it was valued at $11 billion? Truth Social is shrinking. The monthly active users plunged 51% so far this year. The number of unique visitors to Truth Social's website, it was just 648,000, down 20% year over year. That's unique. That's not regular. Basically, it's being described as a meme stock to a point. And yeah, stocks that trade in momentum are subject to falling rapidly. That means Trump Media's share price could keep skyrocketing for now, even though those gains are not backed up by fundamentals. In theory, the rival company or wealthy group could swoop in and acquire Trump Media even at these level prices, though that's very unlikely. Matthew Tuttle, a CEO of Tuttle Capital Investment, told CNN that Trump Media is probably not worth anything close to what the market is valuing it at, but it doesn't really matter. And it doesn't, because here's where this comes back to politics. We have talked the last few days. We talked with Stein on yesterday, and I talked the day before, that the Republican Party has got a really big money problem right now. And if you give money to Trump or you give money to the RNC, you're basically not helping any of the Republicans get elected. Almost all the money going to Trump is for his lawyers, for his court cases and criminal defense. It's not for, and I got another story on this in a second, which we'll put things in a little bit more of a perspective for you here. But this money is not going to help them. So basically what you have is the finite amount of Republican money that's out there is going to one of two things. Either it's going directly to either like a state party or an individual candidate on the Republican side, or Donald Trump is getting you rubes to basically buy Bibles and sneakers and stock. Because I can guarantee you one of the things that's keeping this stock price up there right now, even though it's only $2 a share, is Trump fans going, I was there at the beginning. People that can't afford $2 stocks buying, 100 shares at 70 and are about to lose everything they've got on it. No, there is no there. There seems to be a lot of collusion on this, but at the same time, I'm not against stopping it, because the more that this Trump fans are out there spending money on this garbage stock, which, by the way, I said I'm not going to give you advice, don't buy this stock. Do not buy this stock. I can see this train wreck coming. But the more they are, the less money that goes to Republicans. Bon voyage. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evening on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk, and in the afternoons on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. Good to have you with us, 952-946-6205. So let me fold this back into politics again. So once again, only an idiot would buy the Truth Social stock, because it clearly is fraudulently being inflated, which once again, I don't have any problem with, because I think the vast majority of idiots that are buying it right now at this price are these Trump fans that are buying these Trump gold coins and gold sneakers and Bibles and stuff. And every time they buy something like that, that's not money going to help, say, the Illinois Republican Party or the Minnesota Republican Party or an Illinois Senate candidate or a Minnesota Senate candidate or any Senate candidates. And it is becoming pretty clear that the financial impact of Trump overall is going to be catastrophic this election cycle. That unless something really traumatic happens, that they are already not only fighting with an arm behind their back, they got two of their legs tied behind their back too, and they're trying to win a fight. And it's going to get worse. Let me go into this story from Axios from today. The Trump-led Republican National Committee is scrambling to boost staff and give loyalty tests to 7 battleground states at a time when several GOP state parties are plagued with dysfunction and disarray. So you have to understand what Trump has unleashed upon the Republican Party. In each one of these state parties, you take Michigan, for example, there are really two Republican parties. I can attest to it. It's here in Minnesota, too. You have this traditional Republican Party, which is still thinks of themselves as the party of Reagan and thinks of themselves as, kind of we're not nearly this far right extremist group as they try to play us out to be. but they also don't have the guts to stand up to the extreme far right. On the other side is that extreme far right, which is basically in bed with Trump. And these states have been tearing each other apart. In Arizona, Carrie Lake is basically now pleading guilty to bad-mouthing not a Democrat, another Republican, and is already conceding she's going to have to pay this guy a ton of money for her attacks. That's playing out everywhere, this party war. In Minnesota here, you have some of the kookiest for Cocoa Puff morons I have ever seen, ever in politics, in these unbelievably safe red districts where they're so embedded in there, it's like a moose tick. You're not going to get them out. And not even that if a traditional Republican would be labeled a liberal lefty by these clowns. Meanwhile, the rest of the Republican Party is trying to put together some sort of comprehensive game plan, while the rest of the guys on the far right only are worried about their Twitter trolls. The ones that basically say, "You're the smartest guy I ever met." Oh, keep looking at the bunnies there, Lenny. But that's where you're at. So you've got the state parties imploding. Almost all state parties in the Republican Party have unbelievable financial problems. I don't know of any of them that are doing fiscally really well. So you want to have, when it comes to Trump, you build up your base. You basically have, I'll say with the one that's functioning correctly, the DNC. They're there to help support Joe Biden in his presidential reelection campaign, which is not the same thing as the DNC. He has his own campaign. They work in conjunction with each other, but those are two separate things. And the DNC is looking to help governors, House races, Senate races for the federal level, maybe a few House and Senate races on a local level. Say you have Pennsylvania, for say, that there's a chance that the Democrats could pick up one seat and get complete control of the government. They'll kind of weigh in on that. That's kind of their goal. And then you have the state parties that are overlooking all this. It all is supposed to work in conjunction. Right now, when we're in an election year. And to begin this, not to begin this election year, in February, they brought in Lara Trump into the RNC and they immediately fired most of their staff, which was stupid beyond stupid. And now they're just trying to get together some sort of loyalty pledge that you have to think that the 2020 election was illegally stolen, all these things. It is a mess. It is an absolute mess. And on top of that, the funding that these guys need, if it's not going to Trump legal cases, it's going to stuff like Trump stock, which is worthless, and going to Trump golden shoes, which are worthless. And there are some rumors starting to float around within some Republican circles to basically cut the tether and basically you're on your own. You basically say, do not send money to the RNC. Do not send money to the Republican Party. Do not send money to Trump. If you want to help me win this governor's race, Senate race, send the money to me directly. But that's kind of where the Republican Party is at. And the problem is that generally doesn't. It works for the Democrats. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I get a solicitation from Tester out in Montana. And I've helped John Tester. I mean, I hope he does come back. I like the guy. I actually like him. You know, he's a moderate, but he does remember he's a Democrat, which is a good thing, which I'm a big fan of. But at the same time, you have to have, you know, a system in place. And the Republicans are not used to this system where it's basically everything's on fire. Everyone's fighting with each other. And there's a large sucking sound that's known as Donald Trump. Less than 8 months before the November 5th election, significant parts of the RNC's get out the vote operation in states likely to decide the election are playing catch up after Trump's team ousted 60 staffers in its recent takeover. About a third of those ousted staffers were state directors and regional policy directors, jobs that are key to recruiting, training, and mobilizing volunteers ahead of Election Day. What are you guys doing? Not say, hey, no, keep doing it. We're so scared. Oh, am I terrified? They've been in limbo for 2 weeks after receiving an email telling them they were being laid off but could reapply for their jobs. So you are going into an election cycle where there might be at least multiple state directors and regional political directors positions, which are open, which gives you zero time for ramping up. You're not even going to learn the names of all the people you're supposed to work with in that time. God, this is dumb. Some of those people have, by the way, reapplied and haven't asked to participate in virtual interviews with less than a day's notice. Apparently, a person familiar with the situation told Axios. So even the RNC, by this whole thing, is basically admitting, oh, can you interview tomorrow? Great, because they desperately need to have people in place. One RNC staffer on the payroll through the end of the month was kicked off out of their office by a Trump campaign aide who also locked the staffer out of the data server the ANC used to assist local campaigns. In the interviews, Trump's team has asked for some candidates whether they believe the 2020 election was stolen. That reported by the Washington Post. Trump's RNC initially cut the party's community centers to minority voters and programmed to encourage early voting, but reinstated them after the backlash within the party. Yeah, they're not, you know, yeah. And Trump, by the way, even though he desperately needs early voting to help him, is still bad-mouthing early voting and telling people not to do it. Many Republicans fear the RNC upheaval and the unrelated chaos in the state parties, particularly in swing states like Michigan and Arizona, is a setback for a party that for years has tried to get more volunteers to recruit support back into their neighborhoods. The model that was the GOP's version of the local organizing methods that the Democrat Barack Obama used to get elected president in 2008 and 2012. Obama had a snowflake theory of organizing, said campaign manager Jim Messina. It starts with a person on the inside, and then each layer out, you try to expand. Before Trump's takeover, the RNC staff, hoping to stay aligned with Trump's team at the state level, ran the names of some prospective RNC state directors by Trump's team before making those hires. Even those hires have been cut, though. So they you know, last year when he started bellyaching about the RNC needed a turnover of leadership, he basically was being presented people, and they still let all those people go. I mean, this is insanity. Biden's team, by the way, has been bringing on experienced staffers to lead efforts in swing states, Georgia, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And by the way, I think North Carolina is very much in play when you have that clown car of a governor's candidate and your state education candidate is basically trying to say, when I said we should murder Barack Obama and Joe Biden, you didn't understand the joke. Okie doke. Yeah, that's, yeah, North Carolina's in play. North Carolina is in play at this point. Biden's efforts include piloting digital and in-person outreach programs and slowly opening up field offices. A senior Biden official told Axios the campaign this month has opened 44 offices in Wisconsin, 12 to 14 offices in Pennsylvania, and 20 offices in Michigan. Put this in perspective. Trump has basically just fired half of his state coordinators and regional coordinators. And so they need to get someone that can basically start making phone calls to see who's still left standing. Meanwhile, Biden is opening up statewide campaign infrastructure in all these states. Brandon McPhillips was hired, who ran Senator John Fetterman's campaign in 2022. Jen Cox, who ran Senator Mike Kelly's campaign in Arizona that year. And Tanya Kiorek. A veteran Wisconsin operative also was hired. It's also targeting places where Republican Nikki Haley got more primary votes than Trump, an effort to capitalize on Trump's not reaching out to her voters. I talked about that before in regards to Arizona and Georgia. Two states, Trump has to have those two states. And in both those states, 20% of the vote did not go to Donald Trump. So that's a big problem for them. But hey, I'm sure that you can get a state director in there that can somehow keep like the Arizona Republican Party from suing each other into bankruptcy. Yeah, I bet you'll be fine. Wow. March was about expanding leadership teams, developing an office and staff infrastructure, volunteers doing trainings. All that stuff, all that stuff takes time, said Biden Battleground States Director Dan Cannonan. Trump team spent its winter fighting with Nikki Haley and spending money on legal bills, and they're not doing any of this stuff. Democrats want to talk about process because they don't want to talk about broken, brain-dead Biden and is an absolute failure, Trump campaign spokesperson Daniel Alvarez told. Your entire campaign is insults on Biden. That's your entire campaign at this point. I have been following politics intently, really, probably since 1992. That was, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I voted in the 1988 presidential election, and I voted in elections after that when I was in the military. I really started paying attention to presidential elections in 1992. I voted for Bill Clinton that year. And if you remember, that was a year we had actually a three-headed race. We had Ross Perot in there, too. And I knew a lot of people. I knew a lot of people that voted for Ross Perot. I still went with Bill Clinton. I just couldn't go with, you know, HW. I have been following this over and over. I have never seen a political campaign in such disarray in an election cycle. These guys are starting to make me, they're far closer to RFK Jr.'s campaign than they are to Biden's campaign at this point. This is insanity. I mean, if I'm a Republican, if I am a state Republican, I think you have to basically, at this point, acknowledge you've got no chance to get any help from the top. And the only thing that you can do is say, oh, I support Trump, and hope that's enough, because you're not going to get money from the RNC. And Trump is taking every dime from your supporters that he can, not for politics, but for Bibles and shoes. Trump, like Obama, has a loyal and passionate following and has shown an ability to track large numbers of unpaid volunteers. Trump's operation this cycle in early primary states of Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, which relied heavily on volunteers, helped shut out the GOP competition. But at the same time, he never really did shut them out, especially as close to his incumbent as you can be, as the guy that won the presidency in 2016, lost the presidency in 2020, and is running again. Go buy more. You know, Republicans, go buy more of that Donald Trump stock. Just go. Watch your money disappear. Bon voyage. I'm just amazed at how bad this is going for them right now. And once again, this is on top of the lack of money coming in. They don't have the organization. They don't have the money. And they're being led by a large orange man that's eating the tub of Elmer's paste. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. You run your mouth, I ran a mile. I've It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Okay, so I've got to touch on the story that broke yesterday. Les Parnas, basically rolling out the receipts in regards to his comments in talking about that they just made all of this up. And once again, that Comer and Jim Jordan and, you know, Giuliani have all said, no, there was something there. And there is a video, and he's released the video, that Trump's former attorney and New York mayor, Rudy Giuliani, was trumpeting foul play committed by Biden and his family, despite knowing fully well that he had no evidence of any wrongdoing. Filming himself seated at a table with Giuliani and another gentleman, Parnas can be seen holding a cell phone up, reportedly with Ukrainian prosecutor general Sorkin. And he was speaking. Giuliani tells him, I guess what I'm getting at is, I understand what is wrong. Is there any specific act that could any of these people perform? Did they get a kickback? Did they get a bribe? Shokin unflinchingly answers back, no. Parnas, a convicted criminal who is also a former associate of Giuliani, released the video. That, once again, this is a video of them basically finding out there was no there. Days after he made headlines while testifying before the House of Representatives to say that Giuliani knowingly spread misinformation about Russia, about Biden, he also is appearing to come clean about his actions in the past, saying that he told the FBI in 2019 that GOP's anti-Joe Biden informant should not be trusted. Once again, I think when you look at that informant that they basically threw under the bus, reminder, they had to give discovery to Hunter Biden's legal team in like 2 weeks. And if they would have given them discovery and it was known that basically he had been lying, that whole thing was forced because they knew that if they had done that entire case would have been thrown out and everyone would have been laughing at him. So the federal government had to, as they dragged this guy along, they finally said, okay, finally we have to, because we got to give discovery to Hunter Biden. The video relates to the origins of Giuliani going out to suggest Biden's son, Hunter Biden, was mixed up in questionable money scheme with the Ukrainian energy company Burisma, where he served on the board. He went on to solicit story pitches lifted from Hunter Biden's laptop to news or outlets. So once again, the whole Hunter's laptop. Now, if you are like me, I have for years now had to field conservatives screaming about, why is nobody talking about Hunter's laptop? Funny story. A lot of those people all of a sudden just disappeared. And as a matter of fact, I've had my first conservative troll basically tell me, why do you guys on the left keep bringing up Hunter's laptop? We already know there's nothing there. This is you guys are basically arguing stuff we already know. And my first one of those. There's no there. And by the way, the guy that they tricked, whoever this guy is, they tricked into going on all these news outlets and insisting that the laptop was real. Dude, you had better. Good luck holding any money, because when Hunter Biden's done with you, you are going to basically be broker than, well, Rudy Giuliani. How about I say it like that? Also, there is a very important thing that happened, and it's a minor thing, but it actually has huge consequences. It has to do with Jeffrey Clark. Of course, he was a senior official, former President Trump's Department of Justice. So he worked at the DOJ, which means he did not work for Donald Trump. He worked for the United States government, the U.S. people. The Associated Press reported that Clark, who was acting head of the DOJ's civil division in the waning days of the Trump administration, reportedly had inappropriate and unsanctioned contact with Trump behind the backs of his superiors. According to the AP, Clark maintained there was rampant and widespread voter fraud in the 2020 election and urged the DOJ to take action to intervene in various battleground states that Trump had lost, like Georgia, where Clark is a co-defendant in the Fulton County RICO case. Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen and his deputy Richard Donahue made it clear to Clark that there may have been a few isolated incidents of fraud scattered across various states. It wasn't nearly enough to make a difference on who won the election. They also learned that Clark had direct contact with Trump, which is in violation of DOJ policy as a who had contact with the White House. Even though Rosen and Donahue had told Clark to cease his contact with Trump, Clark continued to communicate with him in direct violation of DOJ rules. My first reaction was, I said it out loud, you violated the White House contacts policy, Donahue testified during Wednesday's hearing. I was taken aback. I said, do not violate it again. During Clark's disbarment proceedings in Washington this week, the lead investigator questioned him under oath about the time at the DOJ and the aftermath of the 2020 election. While Clark spoke generally about his legal background and experience, he invoked a number of privileges to get around answering most questions. But when Clark invoked attorney-client privileges, he got himself into even more trouble. Mr. Clark, you asserted a number of times attorney-client privilege, the D.C. Bar Committee woman Patricia Matthews asked. For whom were you the attorney? Clark then responded that his client was Donald Trump and the head of the executive branch, the sole head, the Unitarian head of Article II, the executive branch of the United States government. This prompted Clark's lawyers to immediately interject and urge their client to plead the fifth to avoid incriminating himself. But he said that he's pleading the fifth. Now, once again, if you're a DOJ employee, you can't plead the fifth. This is how we got all these guys to have to testify in the January 6th hearing. You're employees of the federal government. There is no, pleading the fifth. You work for the government. The fact that he did that implies very strongly that Clark was looking at representing Trump not as the president of the United States, but as an individual at that point, which completely, this is Clark himself annihilating Trump's whole argument that this was part of the executive branch. If it was part of the executive branch and he worked at the DOJ, then he should be talking about it. If it wasn't, if it was Trump as a private citizen and he was acting on the clock as a private lawyer, which he is implying he did, basically you just gave up the ghost. And that's not something you're going to be able to shake away from and anytime soon. You either need to tell if this was executive privilege, you got to tell everybody it was executive privilege and this is what you did. If it wasn't, you know, if it wasn't executive privilege, then you say you plead the fifth, which means that Trump was not acting knowingly, and you and Trump knowingly were not acting as an official agent of the U.S. government. You were only acting on Trump's behalf. So there you go. More on that to come. Chicago, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two up next. Hour number two of the show here. Hey, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Hey, it's Twins Fever. Let's catch it. Hey, Patrick here. Why don't you just give a recap of Royce Lewis's first two at-bats this season for the Minnesota Twins?
At-bat one, a towering, majestic home run. At-bat two, he singles, and then later he tries to go to third. He pulls the hamstring. He's out of the game.
God, it's hard being a fan of this team. Once again, I would like to thank the training and conditioning staff of the Twins for sucking at your job. Dear God, man. Is there anything more freaking Minnesota sports than having a guy come out and hit a home run? Oh my God, isn't it great? And then the very next at-bat in March, he's pulled from the game because he strained his hamstring. And what are the over-under? I don't know how serious it is, but what's the over-under? We don't see this guy again until June. And then he re-injures himself, and we see him again for August and September. God, it's just that.
It's just, you know, you think about Royce Lewis, Byron Buxton. These are guys who, if they could just stay on the damn field, this would be two of the top guys in the game.
I just, you know, you sometimes want to look at a guy and say, Byron Buxton, at one point, you were a guaranteed first-round Hall of Famer. Now, you're not even going to get close. And the reason why is that you cannot spend the most of your career sitting on the pine and act like everyone should acknowledge your talent. Not on the pine, in a stretcher. Jeez. And Royce Lewis seems to be going down the Byron Buxton path of, oh, God, I heard it myself walking out of the dugout. I will never forget watching Byron Buxton when a guy was pitching inside to him. And for some reason, he decided he was going to lean into the pitch to be his tough guy. Bounced right off his wrist. And he's at first base, and he's like, his hand is swelling up. And he's like, I'm fine. It's really okay. And then he was gone for, 6 weeks. Guys can't get out of their own damn way. Oh, can't get out of your own damn way. It is just... I know I'm not a sports station. We're not here. I love the Twins. Of all the sports, I like them most. And it is just impossible to be a fan of this team. It is just because of stuff like this. We're always constantly hoping guys coming up from AAA are going to be enough to fill these holes that we create because our strength and conditioning staff sucks at their job. The worst. I've never seen anything like it. So. Oh, God. We're leading 2-1, by the way, thanks to Carlos Correa, who got a double, and then they scored someone. Did he injure himself yet?
Well, considering last year he was struggling with an injury.
Oh, God, just don't.
Not completely
just stop,
impossible.
Just stop. Oh, God. I got to tell the truth. I mean, because this is Minnesota sports. I look at that Timberwolves team. That Timberwolves team last night, they pulled themselves together, managed to put down the Detroit team they should have beaten by more. And I'm saying to myself, great. And I'm still down deep inside. I'm waiting for their first round getting bounced in the first round by Sacramento or some godforsaken team.
My fear is they'll play a team like Golden State because Golden State, you know, not as good as, you know, maybe they were 5 years ago or so, but, you know, a veteran team who is going to have absolutely no issues with going on the road. They know how to win. They still have an all-time great in Steph Curry. That's not a team I want the Wolves to face.
All right. I'm going to get away from this because I guarantee you there's, what, 4 or 5 other sports guys in this state who are all whining right now about the same thing as I am doing, but I'm just going to move on from it. No, okay, so first things first. I've got some announcements to make. The first is, you thought it was gone for good. Ha! Never doubt the Wheel of Destiny. The Wheel of Destiny will be back here on Monday. We are going to be giving away tickets on Monday to go see Kathy Griffin. She is going to be, it's My Life on the PTSD List. It's, of course, we're going to be giving away tickets for her show Friday, October 11th. You can get tickets. Tickets go on sale the show's at the Pantages Theater on October 11th. Tickets go on sale tomorrow. So here's the deal. To get yourself into the Wheel of Destiny potential to go see Kathy Griffin, what you need to do is go to our AM950 Facebook page, the AM950 Facebook page, and interact in any way with any of our posts about Kathy Griffin. Any way. Like, love, repost, comment, any way. If you go to the AM950 Facebook page, like, post, retweet, comment, anything like that. Got to know my social media pages. Go to the AM950 Facebook page. You can do that, and you'll be entered in on the Wheel of Destiny. You shall not question the Wheel of Destiny. On Monday, we're giving away one second here. Hey, Brett, how many pairs of tickets we're giving away on Monday? He's not answering me. And I got my headset on. How many?
Four.
Four. I got my headset on. I couldn't hear you. That's the old-fashioned radio. I'm going to yell at you across the field. Four pairs of tickets. Four pairs of tickets we're giving away with Wheel of Destiny on Monday. But the only way you got a chance of winning is going to the AM950 Facebook page. Like, repost, comment on any of the Kathy Griffin posts that we make on that page. It has to be one of those posts, okay? Has to be. And you'll get yourself in on the Wheel of Destiny. So four pairs of tickets on Monday for Kathy Griffin. All right. The other thing I want to mention is we don't have a place to sign up yet, but I want to get you an update on what we're going to do. Now, if you've not been to On the Rocks, it's a great spot. It's situated inside the Nicollet Dinah and Roxy Cabaret on the south end of Nicollet Mall there. And On the Rocks is going to be our host location for the what I'm going to call the Sexy Liberal tailgate event we're going to do before the Sexy Liberal show on Saturday the 13th. We're looking at like 4:30 to 7 o'clock at On the Rocks on Nicollet Mall there. It's going to get you. There's going to be a cost to get in, but it gets you light appetizers and 2 drink tickets. And we're going to be doing this once again before the Sexy Liberal show. I'll be out there for that. Looking forward to seeing you guys out there before the Sexy Liberal show. I think Bakken's going to join me out there, so that should be good fun. So we're going to do that, and then, of course, get you ready for Sexy Liberal. We will, next week, have the sign-up available for you to join us for the tailgate event. We want you to join us for the tailgate event. Let you know when that is, but once again, it will be on the 13th at On the Rocks, which, once again, it's right on the south end of Nicollet Mall there. Located in the Nicollet Diner and Roxy's Cabaret. That's where we'll be at, and we look forward to seeing you there. I'll give you more details on that as we get the page up for you to get your tickets to come join us for that event. Looking forward to it. Absolutely looking forward to it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. What's our over-under on how many Twins players are going to be injured by the end of this game today?
Hopefully just one.
You know it's not. I'm going to say 3. God, what are we, some jaded bastards here, aren't we? Our over-under is 3, so Royce Lewis, There's one right there. Let's see how many more injuries we can have to start out the season. Opening day. World Series fever is a very treatable disease here in Minnesota. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. How about something completely unrelated to sports before I get back into sports here? Because I got to talk about the Timberwolves and what happened there with the ownership of the purchase of the team. I'll get to that here in a second. But I want to start off with this humdinger. You remember those ruby red slippers from The Wizard of Oz that were up in Grand Rapids that disappeared? They were buried in someone's yard. Don't tell me. Did someone else just get injured? Don't tell me someone. Okay. Patrick is looking about to say something. And it's like, I was like, don't tell me there's another injury. I'm still over under on three. The ruby red slippers from The Wizard of Oz. Where have they been? For a while, they were buried in crystal in some guy's yard. No joke. A woman with ties to an organized retail theft ring. Do you have business cards or something like that? Okay, never mind. She told federal investigators that Jerry Hall Salederman, the second man accused of stealing the ruby red slippers rode by Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz, had the famous shoes buried in his backyard for at least seven years. The unnamed woman, described as a cooperating defendant, saw the slippers in a grocery bag, according to court documents. Instead of anonymously returning them, like she asked, they were put in a clear plastic container with a white lid and buried near the shed on the south side of Salederman's lawn in crystal. How many important things have ever been buried in crystal? I got news for you, Crystal. You might want to, your whole summer festival, you can build around this. You know, bury the slippers week over in Crystal. There's something you can do with this. They were treated in an ultraviolet sanitizer cabinet, the woman said, to remove the traces of DNA. Salederman, who has a long history of stealing, nice life, was recently charged with the theft of a major artwork for his role in snatching the ruby slippers. The movie memorabilia was easily lifted from 2005 from the Grand Rapids, Minnesota Museum, named for the actress who briefly lived in the town. The slippers were recovered in a sting operation in 2018. But the case has been quiet for years, well, because it had been buried in his yard, until Terry John Martin, who had lived only 50 miles away from the museum, pleaded guilty to the same charge in 2023. Martin, who admitted to taking a sledgehammer to the slippers display case during the museum's off hours, testified that he believed the shoes were decorated with real gems. After his fence told him the rubies were just glass, he gave up the shoes and never saw them again. Martin, by the way, remains in his rural trailer home in hospice as of right now. After being sentenced in federal court to a year of probation, he must make restitution payments of $300 a month to the Judy Garland Museum, but it sounds like he doesn't have long to live. How much longer, the guy that buried him in his crystal yard, how long he goes to jail, I don't know. But that is just weird, man. The slippers were buried in someone's yard. I'm kind of glad they've been recovered. Can you imagine if, like, in 100 years from now, some developer is going out there and tearing down a few lots in crystal, starts digging up the lot, and all of a sudden comes across the ruby slippers? That'd be insane, man. It's insane. You buried them in your yard. I did the same thing with a rabbit that I found dead back there one time. I didn't put them in a container, though. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. Come back. I'm going to touch on the Timberwolves story because, in case you missed it, Glenn Taylor has decided he's not going to sell the team. Well, now that they're good and worth a lot more than they were originally. I'll come back to that in just a moment. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Thursday. How come this first opening game of the season for the Twins makes me feel like it's late August, man? I tell you what, the rest of the show, I'm just going to nap, okay? I'm just going to go to sleep at this point because I'm exhausted. It's the fifth inning of the first game of the season. This team is going to kill me this year. Oh, God. Oh. All right. Since I'm going to talk some sports here today, I might as well get into the one that's a breaking news, which is pretty big news, and it goes beyond just sports stuff. A significant development, that is the understatement of the year, of the future of the Timberwolves and Lynx as Glenn Taylor, yes, that Glenn Taylor, will remain the controlling owner of both franchises after Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez did not close on a $1.5 billion sale of a controlling interest of the franchise by a deadline that expired on Wednesday. But Lohr and Rodriguez are disputing Taylor's version of events, accusing Taylor of seller's remorse while saying they fulfilled their obligation for the purchase of another 40% of the franchise. I will say this about Glenn Taylor. That guy, for the first time in a long time, that guy's got some color to his skin. I'm serious, dude. He's always looked really pasty, but all of a sudden they're winning, and it's like he's coming back to life like Gary Oldman's vampire, for goodness sakes. Oh, God. Sorry. I'm an ass. By the way, that purchase, which would bring their total stake to 80%, had the deadline of Wednesday, but the deal was not completed. Taylor remains the controlling owner. I will continue to work with Mark and Alex or the rest of the ownership group to ensure our teams have the necessary resources to compete at the highest levels on the court, said Taylor in a statement. The Timberwolves and Lynx are no longer for sale. But Lauren Rodriguez responded to Taylor's comments by saying that he had necessary pieces in place to execute the sale. We are disappointed with Glenn Taylor's public statement today, Lohr and Rodriguez wrote in their rebuttal statement. We have fulfilled our obligations and all necessary funding are fully committed to closing our purchase of the team as soon as the NBA completes its approval process. Glenn Taylor's statement is an unfortunate case of seller's remorse that is short-sighted and disruptive to the team and the fans during the historic winning season. Taylor, who also owns the Star Tribune, contends that Lohr and Rodriguez missed multiple deadlines related to the closing process. A source said, Taylor hangs on to his 60% of the team at a time when the value of the NBA franchise has increased. In October 2023, Forbes valued the Timberwolves and Lynx at $2.5 billion, $1 billion more than he agreed to sell it for to Lohr and Rodriguez. It remains to be seen what legal action might come from the Lohr Rodriguez camp. Taylor purchased the Wolves in 1994 for $88 million. God. Lohr and Rodriguez still own 40% of the Timberwolves and Lynx from two previous purchases of 20% stakes in the teams in 21 and 23. Thursday is the culmination of a three-year period in which Lohr and Rodriguez were set to take over the two franchises from Taylor after the sides agreed in the sale from 21 to $1.5 billion. Lohr and Rodriguez had 90 days to complete the final portion of the sale after notifying Taylor of their intent to purchase another 40% ownership stake in late December. It was detailed in their original agreement, but the window closed on that time and no extension was given. So what do I think about this? Now, first of all, I'm going to be blunt. I think that Lohr and Rodriguez wanted to move this team out of Minneapolis-St. Paul the second they could. The second they could, I think they wanted to take this team and get it to, I don't know where, but it's I just don't think it was going to be in Minneapolis for very long. I don't know how the NBA would feel about a winning team all of a sudden turning around and having a winning franchise being moved, but considering the spineless nature of most sports leagues at this point, I'm sure they would have said, okay, good luck. Off you go. And there are plenty of cities they could have moved that team to. I mean, it's not just – I mean, some people had speculated maybe he was thinking about trying to get them out to Puerto Rico. But I don't think they would leave the mainland. I mean, you've got, Seattle, St. Louis. You've got a lot of other communities.
Vegas was probably a big one.
Vegas was probably one that we're looking at for sure. And so that is my belief, is that we're going to keep the franchise here, was going to be quickly followed by, we can't make the franchise work here any longer. Or what they would do is they'd leave the Lynx here and say, you guys got pro basketball, you got the Lynx. Well, they take the T-Wolves down to be, the bankruptcy, sports bet bankruptcies of the Las Vegas community or Seattle or wherever. So I want to be blunt. I mean, I never trusted Lohr and Rodriguez to keep the team here in the first place. Now, I'm not saying that was the case. At the same time, I agree with them. I think this has far more to do with all of a sudden they're a good team. And after all these years of, you know, garbage basketball, we finally have the infrastructure in place to actually potentially win an NBA championship. But considering it's Minnesota once again, I'm anticipating a first round. Well, who could have seen that 4-game sweep coming? That being said, I mean, they actually do have the definitely the future of the league is Anthony Edwards. You know, Cat, if he can stay healthy, is a baller. You know, Rudy Gobert. I mean, I've said this at the beginning of the season. I've never seen a basketball player turn it around so much in one season to the next. He was garbage last season. He's going to win the Defensive Player of the Year this year. He is that good. He is amazing. Big fan of Nas. You know, the team is good. It's got all the cogs in place. And I guarantee that price of what, $2.5 billion in October of 2023, I guarantee you that team is worth probably $3 to $4, maybe $3.5 billion now, as we have, you know, definitely one of the best teams in the league. And right now, they're going to be competing at least for the next few years. I don't know if it was the cost or if it's just the joy of owning a team that's not sucking canal water. I think it's a little bit of both. That all of a sudden, Glenn Taylor, it's a lot easier coming into the office when you're, you know, you've got a game coming up here on Friday for first place in the NBA West. Phenomenal. You know, it's got to be a lot easier walking into that you know, dungeon of horrors that's been Target Center now that you actually have some bright sunshine in there. You've got the fan base's town has picked up. You're selling out games. You've got interest. Games are getting watched. People are showing a lot of interest and paying attention to the T-Wolves, which they have not done in 20 years. And so I think that's part of it. I also think that at the end of the day, Glenn Taylor's a businessman. And I think that in the nature of sports teams, what you're seeing is a team that basically has a skyrocketing value. Now, and as opposed to in last hour, I talked about the Donald Trump Truth Social stock, which doesn't make any sense. There's no value there. It's just being hyperinflated. This is not the same thing. You actually do have value with this team and potential with this team. So the question then becomes, you know, if you make a deal when the team was garbage and you're selling it for rock bottom prices, but now you could probably get another $2 billion for your shares, does it go through? And I will also say, before I, you know, I like I said, I'm not exactly on the side of Lauren Rodriguez here either, because I think it does sound like there were multiple problems with their ownership group bid, that the money was not there. And that as a matter of fact, was the first story. Was it like a week and a half ago was the first story about that, where there's supposed to be money and they don't have the money? I will say this. If Lauren Rodriguez had the money, had agreed to the terms, I'm going to bet they are going to move that team. I'm going to bet they'll be able to sue and possibly win control of that team and then move that team. That would be my guess. Because right now you can't get teams to Las Vegas fast enough. And the only one they don't have right now is NBA. So which team goes first? I got to imagine. I mean, Charlotte or Memphis? I could see Memphis being out there real fast. But that's what's going to happen. That's how I think it's going to happen. But the thing which stinks is this, is we have this is going to be held over our heads. And unless there's some guarantee they can't move the team out of Minnesota, which even if they did, they could easily double cross and no one in the NBA is going to, you know, is going to stand up against it. I just don't know what's going to happen here. But enjoy the team, because whether or not they're still here in a few years remains to be seen. And maybe they'll surprise me. And maybe they'll be worth something this playoff season. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I promise I'm done with sports. I'll come back, talk some other things when I do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Reminder, the Sexy Liberal Show is coming to the Pantages Theater with Stephanie Miller and John Fugelsang and Hal Sparks and Frangela, plus special guests. It's going to be on the 13th of April, Saturday night, at the Pantages. You can get tickets. You can just go, search Sexy Liberal, get tickets there. We're giving tickets away, not right now, but listen today and tomorrow. I got another pair of tickets to give away this week. Listen for your chance to win on those when we tell you to call in right here on AM 950. Now, yesterday, I talked and I got, Patrick, you weren't here for this. I was in angry mode. I was fairly frustrated with this payout to the LA Times journalist, not to the payout, but to the tone from the Minnesota State Patrol, who violently attacked two clearly labeled members of the media in the wake of the George Floyd murder, and basically injured these people, and how their last line of the story did not admit wrongdoing, and the settlement messages left seeking comment were not immediately returned. They did have someone put out we just thought this was the best idea. But once again, they have not admitted any fault in the situation when we all see they were guilty. It was crap police work. There's another story that came on out. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension has settled a lawsuit with five families whose family members were killed at the hands of police. The family said the BCA withheld data about the investigations that should have been public under state law. So basically, they were sued not because of any wrongdoing in the crimes, but because of the fact that the BCA refused to give them public information they were supposed to have. Refused. Come back to that. In each case, prosecutors had received a full investigative case from the BCA and then declined to press charges. At that point, the file typically is considered public information, though some parts may be hidden from view. The attorney, Paul Bosman, said families requested the data and then waited. They were supposed to get it within 10 days. They did not receive the data from the BCA and their attorney. It came down to the fact that we had to sue the BCA to get the data for these families we're entitled to. The settlement is for $165,000. That's state taxpayer dollars because they just didn't want to give the information about the deaths of their family members to the family members. In a statement, the BCA said it settled to limit the cost both financially and emotionally on these involved. Too late. You going to pay the $165,000? Because $165,000 is a lot of money in tax. You're getting really loosey-goosey when you sit there and say, we wanted to limit the cost. All you had to do is give them the damn information. What are you talking about? It's like to limit the cost both financially and emotionally. You're the people. You are the people that dragged them through the mud as they wondered what happened to their loved ones. You did that. Not us. Stop acting like, is this the equivalent of stay with me, man, after you shot the guy? Ignore the fact that we put the bullet in the guy. Just pay attention to the fact that I'm trying to save his life. Ignore the fact that you just didn't do your damn job and give them the public information that they had requested. And because of your ham-handed reaction to this, you just cost the state $165,000 and emotional toil for these families. Requests for data from the BCA have increased dramatically in recent years. They've got some additional funding now that mean they can get faster responses for anyone who requests information. Bozeman said, as part of the settlement, the BCA will, upon request, provide families with a one-page document that outlines what they are entitled to know to and how to get it, complete with contact information. He hopes the settlement make it easier for families. So basically, once again, we're paying this $165,000 not because of a wrongful death suit, but because these jackasses can't basically just give them the information they were entitled to on time. Here's the part which we can always say, and I'll say this as long as I have been watching this stuff for ever since their body camera footage and stuff like that came available. Whenever the narrative of the cop is backed up by the footage, that footage is running on the news that night. The same police cannot get that information to the public fast enough. See this quality police work. The only time I have noticed that police aren't forthright with information is when there are discrepancies between the official story and what the evidence actually shows. And before you clowns basically say, how dare you, Matt McNeil? Jaleel Stallings. Y'all knew he didn't do what you said he did. You all knew he was telling the truth. You all had the video information. And even up until his trial, prosecutors, even though they had seen the proof that he had done nothing wrong, were still trying to get him to sign off on an 8-year prison sentence. Because you beat him in the streets after going on a hunting expedition against the citizens of Minneapolis. And you put this in conjunction with the settlement yesterday for the LA Times reporters. We're not going to admit wrongdoing. You're failing. You're failing after you promised you were going to change your behavior after George Floyd, after all, we're going to change our behavior. Let me explain how they have not changed their behavior. And let me go to another story, which I highlighted last week, about O'Hara, the current police chief of Minneapolis, going to the Minnesota Peace Officers License Training. And once again, this was not 3 years ago. I think O'Hara came in last year after Alejandro left and had to get his Minnesota police officer license. So this was years after, we're going to change. Bull crud. I will never forget some, this is O'Hara. I will never forget some of the stuff I saw when I first went there. This is going to the training facility to get his Minnesota Peace Officer's license. There were posters and they are specific to Minneapolis itself. The images on them were unbelievable. One of them showed a cop being choked while his partner was also being choked at gunpoint. Another said something like how you train will affect how you perform in combat. Literally, combat was on two of these things. That doesn't sound like they changed. Now, O'Hara did. It sounds like he cleaned this up a little bit. Then he went on to talk about the firearms training. This was, once again, not after George Floyd. This was, you know, last year. I'm used to the New Jersey standard where you just train to shoot center mass. In Minneapolis, they tell you, okay, next one in the head. Why are we training people to shoot someone in the head? Then the hobble restraint came up. This is one maneuver that I got rid of when I became chief. It's an issue with the trial of Derek Chauvin, the officer who killed George Floyd. It was a restraint technique called the hobble. It's inhumane. It's hog-tying a human being. I stood there looking as they demonstrated it with one another at the academy. I thought it was a joke. He was also baffled by the widespread use of less lethal weapons, sometimes called rubber bullets, which were at the center of the Jaleel Stallings case. Police were out in unmarked vans shooting 40-millimeter rounds at anyone after curfew in the days following Floyd's murder. When Stallings shot back, the police fractured his eye socket, and the fiasco cost the city another $1.5 million in a settlement and untold credibility with the public. The Minneapolis police had a whole controversy in 2020, the riots, and then again in 2021 with the 20-millimeter less lethal rounds that they shot. The way their policy was written, any police officer could use a 40-millimeter gun if they perceived any threat of bodily injury, but under that statute, that could be a paper cut. That was last year. There is a lot of police right now who are going on the rampage! Rampage! Sitting there all angry, aren't you? Because you keep saying, they keep screaming about defund the police. They're not on our side. But then all of a sudden, hey, you're found guilty of basically assaulting two media members in the street. Oh, we can't talk about that. We don't want to talk about that. And then you basically have a case where families just want to get the evidence that was used to justify the killing of their family member. We don't want to give you that. We're absolute, but we can't give you that. And then you find out that all this talk about we're going to change is all bull crap. When you find out what they were, how they were training people, talking about Minneapolis is a combat zone. What the freaking hell is wrong with you people? That was last year. Take a headshot, shoot him right in the head. That's how you take care. That's good policing. What the hell? Hog time in the streets. Hey, it just, if you need to, pull out that less lethal round and put 50 rounds right into their belly. But then all of a sudden now, how dare you question the integrity of the police department? Have I got a report from the DOJ from last year that you need to read? You guys want to sit there and you want to act as if somehow you've been betrayed when Ricky Cobb, yet another black driver, when he's approached by State Patrol or any law enforcement, the guns are drawn, the safety's off, the finger's on the trigger, the round is in the chamber, and you're just looking for a reason to shoot that guy. And then you act like we're the bad guys because we say, okay, what happened here? How dare you question the integrity? You people wanted to fund the police. Do we need to remind you of where that came from? I was reminded by someone. Do you remember, was it State Patrol was out there deflating people's tires during the uprising, just going randomly through parking lots and stabbing knives into people's tires? What were you guys doing? The drive-by tear gas or, you know, pepper spray stuff. The Rolling Stone article, which talked about how the Minneapolis police had an initiation where you had to go violently beat up some random black person, calling into question Bob Kroll's entire legacy. The murder of George Floyd, the attack on Jaleel Stallings, the numerous other deaths by Minneapolis police that have never really been explained. The fact that your own police department was talked about going on a freaking hunting party on the citizens of Minneapolis-St. Paul. The way you guys consistently attack the media in the aftermath, injuring, hurting these people with glee and delight, might I add. You guys were so damn intent on making sure the media paid for the world seeing how crappy your media policing really was. This wasn't something organic. You guys grew this. This whole idea of defunding the police, because you were so crappy at being cops, we had to come up with some solution. And no, you didn't get defunded, as much as some people said you should. And as a matter of fact, you just got an increase from Governor Walz. You're welcome. But you guys want to sit there and act like you're infallible and you're above reproach and you can't be questioned. How dare you people want to just gloss over not only your ancient history of 4 years ago, but your current history, where your sphincters pucker up pretty damn tight after you demand that the people of Minneapolis and Minnesota pay $1 million plus for your bad behavior with the Los Angeles Times reporters. And you don't say, I'm sorry. You want things to start getting better? Take some personal responsibility, you jackasses, and say, I'm sorry. We're sorry to the people of Minneapolis and Minnesota for having to have to pay this, and we're sorry to those people. Instead, you guys we're just out of the interest of... No, you're not solving the problem if you can't even admit when you catch you red-handed making mistakes that you made one. That's on you. When family members want to find out what happened when their person died, when their loved one died in an interaction with the police, you guys should not be hiding the evidence. Because we've seen that game before. You want to change public perception, make sure people have the evidence. You don't want people thinking like you're doing the warrior training stuff with the people of Minneapolis. Well, then go into your own damn buildings, your own training facilities, your own licensing bureaus, and look the freaking heck around. Combat Minneapolis hell zone, war zone, shoot them in the head, hog tie them. You guys got to change this. And do me one last little favor, if you can, if you want to upgrade. Stop ignoring the DOJ's report on the insane level of corruption within this police department. A corruption you all knew about, because how many of your damn cops retired and said, I got PTSD, chuckling as you got a check out the door? Crap cops. Your reputation is not because of me or anyone that said defund the cops. It's because of you. It's because of you. You are the ones that screwed this up. You are the ones that have created this world. So when you've got this whole thing with Ricky Cobb and you act as if, how could anybody question us? Let me tell you, there's a lot of ways we can question you. We can easily question you a lot of different ways. I just tell someone to listen to today's show starting at about 4:33 and heading forward, because I just gave you 20 minutes of it right there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You want us to trust you, then you need to start doing things right and stop acting like you can still sweep all this crap under the rug. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know.
It is opening day, 2-1. Still the Twins lead the Royals, but Royce Lewis is out after... Now, oh, God. I'm going to be like that elderly woman in Titanic. It's been 87 years! Matt, it's April 10th. It hurts. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I do want to mention the fairly kind of entertaining but yet terrifying story from The Reformer in regards to, I hope you liked March this month. If it feels like March has dragged on forever, that's because technically it has, climatology speaking. The statewide average for winter temperatures this year was more akin to that of a typical Minnesota March. From February through December through February, the average temperature was 25 degrees Fahrenheit. That's close to 15 degrees warmer than the 20th century average and identical to the average March temperatures over the same time frame. That's right, December is actually March. January was also March. February, also March. Instead of winter, we got 3 months of March followed by March, making 4 months total. Hopefully April changes. I don't know. The sheer size of the anomaly is difficult to overstate. We're not just talking about a day or a week or a month of unusual temperatures, but an entire meteorological season. We should note that, however, this winter was the warmest in well over a century in the modern era. It's likely that the winter of 1977-78, another huge El Nino year, was even warmer than this one. And that was what now they have now determined. And once again, it's hard because there weren't back then the number of ships keeping track of water temperatures, but the ones that did said that was, you know, it sure points to that being the biggest El Nino year and the big first one they ever had, which, by the way, should not become as a surprise to anyone when you think about that was kind of the coal age and the burning of wood and all that stuff. That was about 30, 40 years earlier. That was the first one. Minnesota stands alone among the states in the marchiness of this year's winter, the El Nino-driven temperature anomaly driving it all sudden, sitting squarely over the northern tier of the state, while every county in the country had warmer than usual winter, nowhere was it warmer than here. I want to make sure I repeat that one thing because I think that might get a little lost here. Nowhere in the United States, there wasn't a single county in the country that was below average for the year in temperature in winter. Not a single one. Every county, I want you to think about every county in every state, all of them were above average. And if you look at the map they have on this Minnesota Reformer story, it is stunning how hot it was here. Of the 25 counties with the biggest winter temperature anomalies, 24 of them were located in Minnesota. The 25th was just across the Red River in North Dakota. Lake of the Woods County takes home the trophy as the most anomalously warm winter, 17 degrees warmer than usual. The average temperature through the entire winter was 17 degrees warmer than it should have been up at Lake of the Woods County. Only one locale, Alabama's Geneva County, registered a colder than usual winter, coming in at only 0.2 degrees cooler than average. Okay, so I guess there was one. Nearly 500 counties, on the other hand, posted the warmest winter in nearly 130 years. So there was one county in Alabama that was 0.2 degrees cooler than average. One. The entire planet is currently heating up at a pace so it's unexpected. It's got climate scientists worried the models are already out of date. I think they are, because if you look at any of these temperature anomalies, this year is so far off the charts, it is hard to even comprehend. It really is. And so, yeah, we've been saying it's going to get destroyed, and guess what? It's, yeah, they're kind of doing it there. Hey, 2-1 Twins leading, hopefully without too many more injuries. We'll have to hold our breath. Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a good one. We are back on a Friday with Cliff Schechter. Till then, see ya!